At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome to the Hornets Hivecast, presented by Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, your official eye, ear, nose, and throat care provider of the Charlotte Hornets. Here's your host, Sam Farber.
Welcome to another edition of the Hornets Hivecast, your Hornets podcast with all the notes, quotes, and daily buzz around your favorite NBA team. I'm Sam Farber, and it is a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us once again on the HHC. Sadly, first time this season, it's a silver linings edition as the Hornets fell to the Memphis Grizzlies 128-98. It is just preseason, so there's plenty of silver linings to pull from this one. We'll break down the performance in the Hornets preseason home opener. We'll also continue to talk about the NBA GM survey, our takeaways after getting a little bit more time to digest what was said about the Hornets as well as the rest of the league. We'll give our initial impressions on the first video release from the NBA 75 campaign. Did you catch LaMelo? Did you see him? We'll talk about that. And a rule change that actually crept into last night's game, and it has to do with how shooters attempt shots and whether or not they can draw fouls. We'll give you our take on that and the first real implication. Winning challenge for head coach James Borrego. He has a good understanding of the rule, obviously, as he was able to win that challenge even in a lopsided effort. Helping me break down all of these topics, he's my producer on the Hornets Radio Network, Rob Longo. And Rob, let's begin with the game last night, 128-98, the final score. This one was rather lopsided after dominating Oklahoma City on the boards, in the scoring column, really in every which way. The Hornets were dominated. It is important to note that while Memphis was absent several of their players, the Hornets were absent some really significant pieces. Gordon Hayward, who last year for the most part was the leading scorer for the team when healthy. Mason Plumlee, who is the starting center for the team, neither was available to play out due to health and safety protocols, and that left the Hornets with a distinct size disadvantage to the point that they were out-rebounded 68-36. After the game, Terry Rozier, who was the Hornets' leading scorer in this one with 21 points, was not mincing any words. Here's what he had to say about the performance.
I just say it just come down to us getting punked. Like the rebounds, and I know we got our rebound probably about 20 today. You never can win playing against professionals like that. This ain't college. You get yourself a chance to win. It's going to be way tougher.
Rob, he said it pretty simply right there. Your thoughts on what Terry took away from this game? The Hornets just getting beat up on the interior.
Well, it's a good thing it happened during the preseason, right? I mean, that's why you play these games, to kind of learn these things. And you kind of touched on it about what this means during our halftime segment in last night's game, where Mason Plumlee is not going to be there for all 82 games this season, probably. You're going to have to mix and match the lineup a little bit. And that was something that we saw even with last year's team as well, with Cody Zeller being the starter at the five and him going down relatively early into the season. And then it was kind of trial by fire with PJ Washington at the small ball five. So, you know, PJ returned to that role here last night. And again, you're trying to just kind of mix the pieces together a little bit. Again, you're probably not going to see Gordon Hayward for all 82 games this season, especially the way that James Borrego has mentioned it in media availability throughout training camp. It's going to be more of a load management thing for him today. So who even knows if it wasn't for health and safety protocols, if we would have seen Gordon Hayward today. And then again, Kelly Oubre, you're probably not going to see him for all 82 games. You're not going to see everybody for all 82 games. The guy that played the most games last season, albeit a 72-game schedule, 73 if you want to consider the State Farm play-in tournament, was Terry Rozier, and he played in 69 games. Even Terry himself had to take a couple games off just to kind of rest that sore knee. Now again, last season was a little bit of an anomaly because you had so many back-to-back. She had so many games where you couldn't really get any sort of rest going on at all. But again, the schedule is a little bit better this season, but you can't rely on that to be able to play all 82 games. So this was a good learning lesson to understand what kind of pieces can gel together moving forward when you're not going to have the full arsenal.
Yeah, you have to find answers to questions that you don't want to answer. Like, how do you handle a team the size of Memphis when you don't have your starting center? You hope that doesn't crop up in the regular season, but you have to have some kind of solution because it's not like you can punt on the season if that set of circumstances comes in. Now, take this into account. Even if Mason Plumlee misses a couple games here and there, not every team is Memphis. Memphis is enormous, and head coach James Borrego talked about that and the lessons that can be taken away from playing a team like this under these circumstances.
Well, they're obviously a big physical team, but we didn't respond the right way. You know, I thought we hung our heads a little bit. They're big, they're physical. You got to give them credit. We've struggled with them the last couple years, even when we're big, but we got to be more physical. It's one of the areas we've addressed, you know, during camp, and rebounding the ball, being more physical, all five guys on the board. I didn't think we responded well in that area. They got to the rim too much. We didn't get to the rim enough. They won that area. So we got to respond. We got to be better, and we'll learn from this and come back stronger.
I think that's the right takeaway from this. It's not just the fact that Steven Adams had his second straight double-double of the preseason with 15 points and 16 rebounds. It's that the Hornets just didn't have answers. If it were just they were out-rebounded by 5 or 10 against a much bigger team, you know, maybe you find a reason for it. They were out-rebounded by 32. There's a lot of tape right now of Steven Adams out-dueling one or two players or not having five guys crash the glass. There's all kinds of stuff that JB and the staff can point at and say, this is what went wrong. This is what we have to do better. And there are going to be moments in this tape that the team, even losing by 30, can say, here's something we did right. Here's something we can replicate, especially for the young guys. James Bouknight, after the game, I asked him about this. Where are some of the silver linings, if you will? I didn't say silver linings. We'll get to those in a minute. But where are some of the silver linings you can take away and try and expand upon for the future?
Whenever you're down, guys, you got to play more. As a team, you got to be more together more than ever, you know? And I think at times we didn't do that today. And that's what caused us to lose the game like this.
There were a lot of times they didn't do that, but there were times that they did. And Rob, you know, these are the kinds of things. Preseason, it's not necessarily about let's take the entirety of the game. Sometimes it's let's find one clip that will resonate with the player so that they can fix this later. Let's find one thing, one or two things. Winning by 30, losing by 30. They're going to reset the standings. It's going to count for nothing later on. It's all about what you can take away from this experience.
And I think a lot of that ended up coming later in a game. Obviously, some people want to call it garbage time, but in a preseason, it's more like development time. I mean, you get these younger guys in there that need to get those kind of reps. I mean, you take a look at a guy like JT Thor, who has not had a chance to really play a whole lot just because of summer league and everything like that. He comes in and collects a 4-point play. You got guys like James Bouknight, who, you know, obviously had a little bit more extended run in summer league, but now he's starting to play with a little bit of a higher caliber players, not just a bunch of young rookies, and play with some more veteran guys. You're able to see what he's able to do. And the same goes to Kai Jones playing with Ish Smith as well. We saw them hook up a couple times in terms of just some alley-oops and that sort of thing. But when you boil it down, you kind of take it into kind of 5-6 minute runs, chunk plays here and there, and just those guys coming off the bench and kind of stuff. So, you know, the thing that I looked at, I know we're going to get to our silver linings in a few moments, but the one thing that I really took away was just the way that the second unit was able to come out. And I think that's going to be a big key to this team moving forward this season, is how well is that second unit going to mesh, especially when you have guys like tonight where they are normally in the second unit and they got to get elevated into the first unit and those starting roles, and see how that second unit is able to still complement them moving forward.
Well, as both of us have alluded to, with every game, every loss, we always look for the silver linings because they're always there. So as we settle for silver linings, Rob, I will let you go first. Rob, rules are in effect. You may not pick the same silver lining as the other person. Who or what is your silver lining?
Well, if you're going to let me kick it off, I'm going to go with James Bouknight.
Here comes James Bouknight the other way. Bouknight, power dribble up, and he'll fire it down with the right hand. Let out some frustration. James Bouknight.
Like I said in the post-game show, I had Kai Jones all dialed up, ready to go with his alley-oop towards the end of the game, but then James Bouknight just said, I'll come in with my easy bounce, as he calls it. So a lot of people have said that James Bouknight, and this is a little bit of a tease for our second segment with the GM survey, some people say that James Bouknight was one of the steals in the draft, just the way that he was able to fall to number 11. And so far, I'm not going to say he has proved everybody correct, but he is well on his way to proving that he is hopefully one of the steals feels of the 2021 draft just by the way that he's been able to play. We saw him play in a different role in summer league. He was more running the point, having the ball in his hands a lot more often, playing a lot more ISO. Now that he is here in that second unit with some other guys playing the number two, he's got a little bit better chance. He has some pressure taken off of him. That's something that he talked about after Monday's game at OKC, where he can kind of attack the rim a little bit more because he's not having to worry about getting doubled or anything like that. He can play a little bit more freely, and it's really promising to see him kind of build off of what happened Monday and make a thunderous play here last night, because that's what this team is going to need. They're going to need that energy coming off the bench, and James Bouknight's going to have to be one of those guys to provide it for him moving forward.
He definitely did. I think he's had a really good preseason. He's averaging better than 18 points per game, shown an ability to score at this level. Yes, sometimes it's against the third team guys or players who maybe are not going to make the rosters, but these are NBA Summer League, NBA Practice Squad, NBA G League, and borderline NBA level players. So it is still an impressive accomplishment. Hey, there's not a lot of other guys averaging these kinds of point totals, so hats off to James Bouknight. I thought overall the entire rookie class, everyone who was drafted, had something positive to take away. Bouknight had the dunk. Scotty Lewis had a steal and a breakaway and a dunk. He was a +9 on this game. He was the best in the plus minus category. We saw JT Thor knock down a 4-point play. He finally sees the ball go through the cylinder. And Kai Jones had a couple of nice plays, including a dunk and on an alley-oop, and he made a few free throws out there. I think everyone had something positive that they could take away. My silver lining is Terry Rozier.
Smith blows right by Anderson, floats into the lane, kicks it out. Rozier, wing three, on the way. Yes, sir! Got it, plus a foul! De'Anthony Melton picks up the personal, and Terry Rozier has a chance at a 4-point play.
This was a good game for Rozier. He ends up completing that 4-point play, by the way. He only scored 11 points, only made 1-3 in the first win against Oklahoma City. He's a guy that they're going to need a lot of the time to be a volume scorer. It's okay if the opposition wants to try and take him away and leave open LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward and P.J. Washington and Miles Bridges. They're all going to make him pay. But there are going to be a lot of nights where you just need Terry Rozier to take off. I had no doubt it was going to come, but it was nice to see it come to fruition in this one. He goes 5-for-9 from deep, 21 points to lead all Hornets on this evening. All right, that's going to do it for let's just put that one away. 128-98 was ugly enough. We've talked enough about that game, although we will bring it back a little bit later because there was one coach's challenge I want to talk about moving forward. But coming up next, we're going to go back to the NBA GM survey. And did you see the NBA 75, the first video drop? Did you catch LaMelo? We'll talk about it next here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Be sure to check out the Hornets Fan Shop at Spectrum Center. Now open Thursday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Check out all the newest Hornets gear or grab a new pair of J's. It's an easy trip on the light rail, or you can shop from the comfort of your own home 24/7 at HornetsFanShop.com.
Sam Farber and Rob Longo here with you on the HHC. Rob, the NBA 75 campaign is just littered with stars of the association going back generations. This is really going to be a lot of fun. It's been pumped up. And the first videos, at least as far as I've seen, the first video dropped yesterday. It's about, 3 minutes long. And about 2 minutes in, LaMelo Ball makes an appearance. It's not a speaking part, but I think he gets SAG credit, industry term. And in any case, LaMelo Ball was in there. Did you catch it?
No, I didn't, because I had you watch it, and I said, I don't think I saw LaMelo. And you can go ahead and explain what the situation is, and then I'll give you my alibi.
So Michael B. Jordan is basically driving the bus through NBA town, I guess. I mean, he's driving the bus and passing all these superstars, and at one point, he passes an NBA Jam arcade box, and LaMelo Ball is playing Benny the Bull, and it's Chicago versus Charlotte, and LaMelo puts his hand over Benny's eyes. It's a cute little thing. I've heard there are more appearances, or there should be more appearances with LaMelo. I'd have to assume there will be, but it was nice to see the Hornets represented and kind of old school and new school, because a lot of people really love that Charlotte team in the NBA Jam, the original, and now a lot of people are really loving the current Charlotte team, especially with an exciting player like LaMelo Ball.
So the whole reason I didn't notice LaMelo is because I was too busy focused on the NBA Jam video machine, because I wanted to see who the teams that were playing. It was Charlotte and Chicago. And I said, oh, okay, well then I'm thinking, I'm going back in my head. I'm thinking, okay, if it's the 2x2 NBA Jam, I'm thinking of Larry Johnson and everybody else on that team. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. And then I saw Benny the Bull, but I just kind of blacked out when I saw LaMelo. So that's my excuse. I'm sticking to it.
All right. We'll take the excuse, I guess. Charlotte, well represented, I guess, so far in the NBA 75 campaign. By the way, the original duo, I think, from the NBA Jam, I believe it's Larry Johnson and Kendall Gill in the original NBA Jam. So a lot of good players to choose from that generation. And, of course, this generation's got a lot of good pairings to pick from. Wanted to touch a little bit more on the NBA GM survey. We talked about it yesterday with Stan Norfleet. Want to get Rob's take on it as well. A couple of categories we didn't get into in yesterday's podcast. What's one thing that stood out to you? Charlotte made a number of mentions, a lot about improved team. The point guards got a lot of love, both Ish Smith and LaMelo Ball garnering mentions. And then, you know, rookie steals, both Kai Jones and James Bouknight are mentioned there. What stood out to you?
Yeah, I think the rookie steals is the one that stands out the most to me. They have Jalen Suggs at 23%, Alperen Sengun. James Bouknight at 3, though, in that 11th overall spot at 7%, along with Jalen Johnson, who went to Atlanta at the 20th spot, and Trey Murphy, the 3rd, who went to New Orleans at number 17 overall. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting because we already saw what James Bouknight has been able to do so far with his scoring average and that sort of thing. So, I mean, the fact that the rest of the GMs and the rest of the league is kind of taking notice, and that's something that I think we kind of talked about on the Draft Night podcast that we all did, was none of us really expected James Bouknight to be there at number 11, and lo and behold, he was there. So I think that's one of the ones that I definitely agree with in the GM survey, at least. Makes me feel good that I have some right opinions with the rest of the GMs in the association.
Yeah, I would agree, too. And look, it's going to be a tough climb for James Bouknight to make it back-to-back Rookie of the Year for Charlotte, because this roster is much deeper, particularly at his position. You know, Terry Rozier is going to start there, and he's going to get a lot of minutes. So, you know, working his way into a situation where he can average enough points and get enough shots up to compete with the Jalen Greens and Cade Cunninghams of the world, that's going to be a tough accomplishment. But in terms of impactful rookies, he is going to have a huge impact on this team, because the Hornets are slotted as one of the top four teams that GMs believe will be the most improved. Chicago Bulls are number one, and that makes sense. I think they made some really good moves at the end of last season, bringing on Vucevic in the offseason, adding Lonzo Ball. They made some big moves, and the ones they made at the end of last year obviously did not come through for them because they didn't make the playoffs or the play-in tournament, but there's a lot of time for everything to kind of solidify for that squad. So I understand why they were number one. Golden State Warriors at number two. Look, they're going to get an all-time great shooter in Klay Thompson back, so long as he's healthy, and I'm really hoping he will, because he's had a dreadful 2 years trying to work his way back. He deserves to get out there on the floor. You would assume they would be better. And the LA Lakers, some of the moves they made, they've got the potential to be better too. The only group that I really feel has a chance to make a big jump without making an incredibly major outside move, not discounting the additions of Kelly Oubre or Mason Plumlee or Ish Smith, but for the most part, this is about this core aging, getting more experienced, getting better. I think Charlotte is at the top of that heap. So I think it's exciting that the other GMs see this as a squad that can be most improved, or one of the most improved. Again, not discounting what those veterans bring, and they're going to be key down the stretch because they bring the bulk, if not almost all, of the playoff experience to this team. But seeing that everyone sees a lot of promise in these youngsters, that stands out to me. One other category I wanted to touch on, partially because it leads into the next thing we're going to talk about, is what rule most needs to change. The GMs were asked to throw something in there. One that was the take transition fouls. I think that's when you're coming up the floor and people are obviously grabbing and holding you up, and it's not a clear path foul, but maybe slowing down the speed of the game, obviously taking away a fast break. I think that is what that is in reference to. Additional coaches challenge, or you get to keep it when you're successful. I can't say I disagree with that one. Free agency before the draft, I would personally like to see that. I think it would make things a lot simpler. It's really quite awkward on draft night where you see someone wearing a hat that they are not going to be wearing and everyone in the world knows it, so that's a little weird. There's the Elam ending, which, by the way, it's great to see Eric Collins and Del Curry and Ashley Shamedy last night at Spectrum Center. Eric is like the king of the Elam ending call. The Elam ending, for those of you who don't know, instead of playing to the end of a time, you play to a score. So at the fourth quarter, at some point, you would turn off the clock and say, okay, we are playing now to this number, which is X beyond what the leading team has. First one to get to it wins. And the end result is there's always a game-winning shot. I don't like it for every game. I like it for all-star games. I love it for summer league. Preseason wouldn't be a bad idea. Of all the rules that we could change, Rob Longo, what's the one you want to?
I really do like the Elam ending. I think that is just incredible. It's like, it gives you that vibe like you're playing in a schoolyard where it's like, all right, first to 11, we're going by ones and twos and off you go. And then you just re-rack when you're playing pickup. But I think the free agency one is a little bit interesting. But now that I think about it, I'm not, you know, going to pick every single one that you think that I'm going to be doing. But the one that I'm going to hone in is the coach's challenge. And honestly, I understand that pace of play and the time of game and the flow of the game is really important to the league. But I would not mind having more coaches' challenges. I would not mind having maybe one in each half. I think, you know, I don't want to overdo it, obviously. Like, you know, with football, you have your two and you can kind of use them wherever and you lose your timeout, that's fine. I think if you're able to put one in each half and then that way you're not, especially with the rule change this season where not everything is getting reviewed under 2 minutes in terms of the
out of bounds calls.
You're not, you know, now that those are not getting reviewed under 2 minutes, those coaches' challenges are really, really, really valuable now. So that's why I think maybe if you do one in each half, that would be maybe a good bounce.
Yeah, I think maybe for me it'd be more you get two if you were right on the first one, and maybe you have to use it if you want it's a chance to get it back again. You have to use it before, say, 2 minutes are left in the game, so we don't want to drag that last portion out. But yeah, that's not a bad one to have in there. One rule change that did happen for this season, they kind of changed the rule on shooters drawing fouls intentionally, using a pump fake, getting a defender in the air, and then going straight up. If the defender crashes into you, that's still a foul. But there are some changes this year. When a shooter launches or leans into a defender at an abnormal angle, emphasis on abnormal, that's on the offensive player. If the shooter kicks his leg up at an abnormal angle, focus on that word, abnormal, that is an offensive foul. When an offensive player abruptly veers off his path into a defender, either sideways or backwards, that's on the offensive player. For the most part, I like it. There's a little part I don't. It actually came into play last night. We'll talk about that next here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Hornets fans, make sure you download the Hornets app this season for an enhanced game day experience. The Hornets app is your home for the game day digital program with all your information on your favorite team and giveaways every game day. You'll also find predictive games, mobile food ordering, and even a wallet for your NFTs. Download the Hornets app today.
Sam Farber and Rob Longo here with you on the HHC. All right, Rob, yesterday was a 30-point blowout loss for the Hornets, but there was a little bit of history made, I think, in James Borrego, head coach of the Hornets, continuing his run of success when it comes to coaches' challenges. He was very good last season. He's off to a good start this season, going 1-for-1. He challenged a play where Kyle Anderson, at the end of the third quarter, did a pump fake, got the defender in the air, and jumped slightly at an abnormal angle and drew a foul. Foul was called. JB challenged it, saying that Anderson had moved into an abnormal angle, changed his normal shot pattern to try and draw the foul. I think by the letter of the law, it was the right call. And that's what's important here. JB and his staff and his players identifying what needs to be done. Hopefully they can keep that in play on the offensive side too and not, you know, fall into the trap. I think for the most part, the Hornets are kind of like Lionel Messi. Messi always had the reputation of if he can stay up, he's going to stay up. He doesn't take dives. Other superstars do take dives. They're trying to draw penalty kicks or draw fouls and be able to take free shots. Messi, if he can play, if he's down, you forced him down. That's clearly a penalty. So I think with the Hornets, for the most part, they're playing it straight up. But there was a part of the rule that I don't entirely like. I understand watching the video back a couple of times, Kyle Anderson definitely did kind of lean his body in an abnormal angle, but to me, it was to avoid the contact. And I feel like if a defensive player is going to crash into you, it shouldn't be completely on the offensive player to say, nope, you have to continue to go straight up, get hit in the face, get hit in the, you know, that shouldn't have to happen for you to get a foul. If you turn a little bit so you take it more on the shoulder than right in the face, I think there should be a little bit of wiggle room there for that one. All that said, my opinion doesn't matter. That's not the rule. JB got it right. But I just want to put that out there for the fans here on the Hornets Hivecast that I think it's an appropriate change. I don't think it's an entirely correct one, though.
Well, first off, an absolutely great call by James Borrego to challenge that, because just like the players, this is preseason for the coaches too. And if you notice the past couple years, we'll use the NFL as an example once again, where there's those times where there's a rule that they're really trying to put an emphasis on, and it happens in the preseason, and they call it over and over and over and over again. This was a really good opportunity for James Borrego to get an understanding of what the new rule looks like in action during gameplay. You can send out all the videos you want from the league about previous things where, well, this should be different, but the fact that you can see it with your own two eyes in front of you during a preseason game makes all the difference in the world. So good job by James Borrego and his staff to notice that and say, you know what, this game's out of hand, it's preseason, it doesn't matter as it is, let's go ahead and burn our challenge and see what the call is. I thought it was a great job. I don't know, I understand, I see both sides of it. When it first happened, I personally thought that it was not going to get overturned, and I was a little, I guess, pleasantly surprised when it was overturned, just because it was in favor of the Hornets, obviously. But I can see both sides to it. It's going to be one of those things that's going to take a lot of time to adapt if you are a shooter, if you're used to looking for that contact. Because there were a couple times in last night's game where Terry Rozier comes down the lane and he got bumped from behind. Because we've seen that a couple of times in the last couple of years where players will come down the lane and they'll kind of stop and kind of back up so they can draw that contact and then try to get continuation. Terry wasn't trying to do that. He just got bumped because that's how the play developed. But the fact of the matter is, you're going to see a lot of players who are used to trying to draw that contact and trying to get that continuation or just put up that circus shot to at least go to the foul line to maybe get three shots if you're beyond the arc and that sort of thing. So this is something that's definitely going to take some time for everybody to get used to, because it's just one of those habits. You see a guy coming to you, you're kind of taught to put your body into him a little bit so then that way you can draw the foul. So it's going to be interesting to see how this moves forward and if it's going to be consistent throughout the season on how it's called.
Well, I think it's really going to change a lot of people's games, and here's the case I would put in point. Terry Rozier is an elite scorer in the NBA, 20 points per game last year. He only attempts on average 2 to 3 free throws per game. Some other guys who are really trying to get fouls, either by jumping into players or doing that arm sweep move, but it's a part of their game. And look, to their credit, they were taking advantage of the rules the way they were. The NBA is making a change saying, hey, we don't want you doing crazy non-basketball plays so that we blow the whistle and we have a free throw competition. That's not what we want to see. If you're fouled, you're fouled. If you're trying to get fouled, not by a pump fake to get the guy off balance, but I'm going to lunge 6 feet to the left and then shoot because then I can come into contact with you, that's not going to be permissible anymore. So a couple of examples. Said Terry Rozier's 2 to 3 free throws per game. Luka Doncic, last 2 years, 7 free throw attempts per game, 9 free throw attempts per game. James Harden, he, in the last couple of years, he has been at 7 free throw attempts per game. Back in 2019-20, he was close to 12 free throw attempts per game. Extremely good at drawing fouls. LeBron James, I don't think he quite has the same reputation. He's someone who goes into contact by driving the lane a lot, so a different type of player. But even he is at the 5 to 6 to 7 free throw attempts per game. So I think that kind of shows it. If someone is physical, as LeBron James is only getting to the line that much, and James Harden and Luka Doncic are getting there almost double the amount of times as LeBron James, that I think shows, look, they're not fouled that much more than LeBron James is. They're trying to get fouled. And for Terry Rozier, a guy who is really just trying to get his shot off, I think it's going to level the playing field a little bit. I would not be surprised if at season's end, Luka Doncic, as spectacular a player as he is, if instead of averaging 28 points a game, maybe he's 25 points per game. James Harden, he'd been a 30-point-per-game guy before. Obviously, going to Brooklyn is going to change that a little bit. Maybe he comes down to about a 20-point-per-game guy because he can't get to the line as easily, as frequently. So I think this will have a pretty significant impact on several NBA players.
And don't get me wrong, trying to draw fouls is an art form. It's definitely a part of the game, but it's getting to the point now where people are just looking for contact just to look for contact.
Yeah.
For the most part.
If you draw a foul because you get a good pump fake, you got the guy in the air, he crashes through you, that is a foul. It still is a foul. It's supposed to be a foul. If you draw a foul because you've got a guy running alongside you and all of a sudden, for no reason in particular, you jump to your right so you crash into him and then shoot at the basket, that shouldn't be a foul. And that's the change the NBA is making. We'll see how it plays out on night one, at least for the Hornets, where it could have come into play. A correct challenge by James Borrego, so a good understanding from this coaching staff on what the mechanics are. To me, it was a borderline call, and again, in my personal opinion, I'm not sure if that should have been changed by the rules committee, but the fact of the matter is, it was, and JB on a rather borderline call was able to identify it, and his staff was able to and get the advantage of a one challenge. In a 30-point game, it doesn't really matter. In a one-point game, it obviously could. That's going to do it for this edition of the Hornets Hivecast. We invite you to join us again on Monday. We'll get you ready for the Hornets' next road contest at the Miami Heat. Till then, for my producer and partner on this edition of the HHC, Rob Longo, I'm Sam Farber saying it's been a pleasure and a privilege having you with us, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Hornets Hivecast.
Thanks for listening to the Hornets Hivecast. For more coverage, visit Hornets.com.